Musing a DC Comics podcast. I'm your host, Adam, and with me, as always, is my co-host, Jordan. Jordan, how are you?
I'm doing great today, Adam. We are 84 days away from the Batcat wedding as of this episode dropping, so that is very exciting. Yeah, no complaints, man. How about you?
Well, I'm just fighting off a cold, but other than that, I'm doing well. I've got some Tylenol cold and flu in me, so whatever you say is going to sound genius today. So enjoy it. It'll probably be the only podcast. I'm kidding. A question, update before we get down to business here. Did you get your invite for the Batman and Catwoman wedding?
Still have not.
Still waiting on it.
I'm waiting. Yeah. I don't know if I don't get it soon. I'll send an email to Bruce or Selena and see if it might have gotten lost in the mail or something.
And I'll send an email to a psychiatrist for you. but we're not here to talk about, much to your chagrin, we're not here to talk about the Batman Catwoman wedding just yet because it hasn't happened. Instead, we do have a movie review today. It's the latest DC AU animated film. It's
not DCAU, DCUAOM.
Oh, whatever. I don't know these initials.
No, here. I think it is important.
You're good with the initials. You're good with the acronym or whatever it is.
Yeah, because it is a little bit of a pet peeve of mine when people refer to these as the DCAU, because that specifically, that acronym, or not that acronym, that those initials specifically pertain to the Batman animated series through Justice League Unlimited.
You know why I got confused? Because our guest has a profile picture of Batman the animated series, so that was in my head. So there you go.
That's true. But yes, DCUAOM.
Yes.
And
the latest release is Suicide Squad: Hell to Pay, and we have a guest to help us go through this one. Who do we have, Jordan?
Yeah, we're bringing in my buddy Terrence O'Neill from the Robin Everyone Loves the Drake podcast and the Batman and Robin Eternal podcast. So thanks for joining us, Terrence. Welcome to the show, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. And when you mentioned that we'd be doing this one, I was really interested in this movie. And no spoilers, but it did not disappoint. So I'm glad I've got something that I really like to talk about, because nothing's worse than getting invited on. Because when you invited me on, the movie hadn't come out yet. So nothing would be worse if I was like the Debbie Downer, like, yeah, there's another thing I didn't like. So, but
Jordan's done that to a few of our guests on the Superman the Movie podcast and Superman 2. So it's all good.
Yeah. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely, man.
Nice to have you. Before we get to the review, do we have any news this week, Jordan?
Yeah, just one little brief thing that we'll talk about, which is that the actor Pedro Pascal has been cast for a key role in Wonder Woman 2.
I personally don't have any familiarity with this actor, apart from the fact that I know he's in Narcos, I believe it is.
Yes. I looked it up, Adam. This is crazy. He was in the 2011 Wonder Woman pilot with Smallville alum Adrian Palicki.
You know, I saw that pilot, regrettably. I like Adrian Palicki. I liked her on Smallville.
Absolutely.
But I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of glad that didn't go forward and we have Gal Gadot instead. But yeah, I mean, look, like with Kristen Wiig, my comment is this: I'm gonna trust whoever Patty Jenkins casts at this point. She hasn't let me down yet, so I'm just gonna roll with it, because again, I don't have enough familiarity with this actor to say, yeah, I like it, or no, I don't like it. So that's my stance. Terrence, what about you? What are your thoughts on this choice?
I'm in the same boat as you. I don't really know this actor, but after how much I liked Wonder Woman and how great that was, I give that whole Wonder Woman creative team, you know, carte blanche to do whatever they want, because they know how to make a great movie, and I'm sure whatever role he'll be will be good. It'll be interesting. I have seen some speculation that he might be like the male cheetah or the man cheetah. I'm not even sure what it's called, other than, you know, I guess in the male dominated books, it's always like bad woman or lady or girl to the end of whatever it is, but I guess man cheater or whatever. He does kind of look like he might be cool for that, but who knows what he'll play. But I'm sure it'll be awesome if it's anything like the first movie.
I've heard speculation that he might be Vandal Savage, which would be interesting.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
Especially be what awesome. We're talking about today, it would be really cool to see him in a live action film. We've seen him on Legends of Tomorrow, but not a live action film.
And on Smallville, sort of.
Curtis Knox.
But it was later confirmed that he was supposed to be Vandal Savage.
Well, they could have just called him Vandal Savage and then.
Well, no, they could. They didn't have the rights at the time.
Are you kidding me? Seriously?
So that was the issue.
That's ridiculous.
Now, has it been confirmed that Vandal Savage will be in the next Wonder Woman movie, or is that speculation?
No, that's just fan speculation at this point.
Because I was going to say, he'd be an awesome character for the Wonder Woman movies, because since he's lived for so long,
exactly.
He could have known like the Amazons in ancient Greek time. He could have met Diana shortly after World War I. Then she could like see him again. Like, yeah, he'd be fantastic for that movie series.
Yeah, Patty Jenkins, I don't know if you're listening to this podcast. Probably not. But if you are, you know, if you're still, you know, tweaking the script, you know, you want to make him Vandal Savage, we'd be cool on the show.
What if he winds up playing the same role that he played in the 2011 Wonder Woman pilot?
A cop?
Wouldn't that be nuts?
I think it's more substantial than that.
I don't know. How big a role? Because I've only seen a clip from it, and he wasn't in that clip.
Well, I think
how substantial a role did he have?
He was supposed to be like a sort of love interest kind of thing.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they're going to do that. I think just from the secrecy about it, I think it's something more substantial. Because if it was just, you know, average Joe Blow, cop number 3, they probably would have announced that. They probably would have said it in the article. But the fact that they're keeping it under wraps, to me, suggests that it's something bigger. So,
well, it could be another Jenna Malone case where she just turns out to be Jeanette Clyburn.
Well, yeah, there's that.
And we speculate for months and months about
everybody was like, Batgirl, and then, okay, no, there's not. And we're still waiting on that Batgirl movie. But Jordan, what are your thoughts? Besides, I mean, do you have any familiarity with this actor? No, I
haven't seen him in anything. Like I said, I haven't even seen that Wonder Woman pilot. I've just seen a clip from it, and I don't think he was in that clip I saw. I have no familiarity with this guy, but you know, I second what you said, which is just I trust Patty Jenkins. I trust DC. DC has a great track record with casting, just in general. So you know, I'm trusting it. I'm excited to see what he brings to whatever role he does play.
Can't wait. If I could buy my ticket right now, it would be in my hands. I'll say that.
Well, you got to get your Aquaman ticket first, well, and then your Shazam ticket.
That is true. You know, I might as well just buy my ticket for DC Untitled movie in 20 whatever and just buy it, because I'm going. Who am I kidding?
They could make one of those. They could make like a I don't know what you'd call it exactly, but you remember how they had like that ultimate ticket for I think it was maybe BVS.
Yeah, it was BVS, the $50 thing where you
could go see it as many times as you wanted. They could do something similar to that, where like for the rest of the DCEU movies, you buy like one ticket.
Well, I'd buy that. I'd do it. Sight unseen, yeah. I'd do it. Yeah, and then they announced Joel Schumacher's coming back to Batman. It's like, oh, but no.
Hey, that's unfair. That's unfair. I've defended on this show many a time whether or not you like those movies or not. The problems that those issues have, he was mandated by WB to do what he did.
Yeah, I know. Again, he's a good director. Just unfortunately, didn't quite work with Batman, but let's not go there. This is not that time. We did one of them already, and I'm not looking forward to the next one, so we'll bypass that. We'll bypass that for now. Let's actually talk about the movie that just came out that we just recently watched.
Yes.
Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay. Jordan, as always, let's defer to the ever trusty IMDb description, and there is some sarcasm there.
Alrighty, are you thinking one sentence? Hey, well, they did do a really lengthy one for Lego DC Superheroes The Flash.
That yeah, we which I know for. Is a favorite of yours.
Oh boy, don't even get me started. Fortunately, we're going to talk about a movie today that I like significantly more than that film. So, but
gonna,
yeah, are you thinking?
I'm going to say that? I'm going to say a sentence and a half.
What does that mean? A sentence and a half?
I don't know. But
does that mean they use bad grammar?
It's IMDb, isn't it? User submitted.
And used a partial sentence or whatever you call it?
My 8-year-old nephew could submit a sentence to that website.
All right, it's one sentence.
Right, Adam, that was so. Wrong.
All right. Task Force X targets a powerful mystical object that they will risk their lives to steal.
Well, I mean, I can't argue with the validity of that sentence.
And directed by Sam Liu. I believe this is his second in a row because he did Gotham by Gaslight as well.
Oh, yes.
His second in a row in terms of the DCU AOM line. And then written by Alan Burnett. And I believe, I could be wrong, so don't quote me on this, I believe this is his final film before he retires.
Oh, that's unfortunate. I really like his participation in all these. So yeah, that'd be unfortunate. But
yeah, me too. But a good one to go out on, at least in my opinion. I mean,
yeah.
Hey, and I didn't see Bruce Timm's name at all in this. Was Bruce Timm involved in this at all, or is he just off doing other things, or is he no longer making these movies?
I don't believe he. Okay, so here's the deal with Bruce Timm with these movies. He did a long, like he was heavily involved from the inception of the DCU AOM line back in 07 with Superman Doomsday. He was heavily involved in all of them. Then he took a back seat for a while, but there were certain ones that he'd still get involved in. Like he was very involved in just the Gods and Monsters. He was very involved in
The Killing Joke. I know that one, right?
The Killing Joke, yep. And also, I believe he had some involvement in. Did he have some involvement in Gotham by Gaslight? No, I'm sorry. He had some involvement also in Batman and Harley Quinn. Yeah. I'm not sure about Gotham by Gaslight.
No, I don't think he was
Okay, but he hasn't, in terms of the ones in the New 52 inspired shared universe, like Suicide Squad Hell to Pay. That began in 2014 with Justice League War. I do not believe Bruce Timm has been involved in any of those.
Yeah, it seems like he's doing the ones that are outside of continuity.
Yeah. And so, he's not involved in this one, I don't believe, in any way. And it's the designs they use for the New 52 inspired shared universe. Obviously, we know for a lot of the out-of-continuity ones, not all of them, but for a lot of them, they use sort of Bruce Timm-ish designs. I mean, sometimes straight-up Bruce Timm designs, like with Gods and Monsters, like with Batman and Harley Quinn. But it's actually, for the New 52 inspired shared universe, it's Phil Bourassa who does these character designs, who also does the character designs for Young Justice, and he also does the character designs for the CW Seed Arrowverse animated series. So that's why there's a very similar, you know, character designs in these and in those other DC properties.
Now you just got me excited for Young Justice, now that you mentioned it again. I can't wait for that.
Oh, of course.
And you mentioned it. These characters do have sort of a Young Justice feel, but, man, this guy, I forget his name. You'd have to say it again, but his character designs for this movie are awesome. Oh, every character is amazing in this movie. Yeah.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, I totally agree.
But, all right, so let's get into it a little bit.
Are we going straight past the spoiler wall?
At this point, you're listening to this podcast. You know what we're talking about. We are going to talk spoilers, so beware. If you haven't watched it, pause this, watch it, and then come back and listen. If you don't care about spoilers, then
do you? I know that Terrence and I already said that we liked it, but do you want to give your whether you highly recommend it?
Okay,
or not?
I'll do my pre-spoiler thought. I really like this one. This is fantastic. It was a lot of fun, and not in the you know, the Rotten Tomatoes description of every Marvel movie kind of fun, but fun. The character designs were great. The voice acting was solid across the board. And it actually did some things that I wish the live-action Suicide Squad movie had done. But I'll get into that as we go over into spoiler territory. So I highly recommend this movie.
So it gets a thumbs up, I guess, from all three of us then.
Yes, yeah. So
three, go watch
is
it.
Is that three thumbs then, or six? I don't know, but thumbs up regardless for sure.
Yeah, and I was gonna say too that I am not a huge fan of these movies in general. I have not really liked the animated movies.
Okay.
And this one I absolutely loved, and I think for me it's my favorite one of all of them. It's the best one that I've seen so far. I'd put this
of the
number
whole,
one
of the whole. UAOM line or just of, the new D2 inspired ones or
of any DC animated movie regardless of whatever universe or anything like that. I would
so like
put
going
this
back to Mask of the Phantasm in 92.
Yep. I haven't watched Mask of the Phantasm in a long time. It's the 25th anniversary is this year, so I know we gotta do a 25th anniversary podcast on it or something.
Sorry, yeah, 93, but 93.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've seen that, but yeah, I would, you know, I would put this as my number one.
Wow.
Awesome.
And
wow.
If you asked me what my number one was before this, I'd probably would have said the Flashpoint. And I think it's called the Flashpoint Paradox or something.
Yes,
I think
yeah,
they changed
yeah,
the name a little bit, a little bit.
The Flashpoint Paradox.
Yeah, that's now number two for me.
Okay.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
And in general, I don't really like these movies. I think the plots are just kind of meh. I think the action is kind of like it's almost sluggish and slow, and there's too much fighting that's just kind of boring to me. And this moved fast. The action was great. I just thought it was fantastic. So this is coming from a guy who doesn't really normally like these movies, and I'm saying it's the best one I've seen.
So we really did pick a good one for you to come on.
Yeah, I know.
It just worked out beautifully. But yeah, so let's get right into it. What I like about this movie.
Spoilers
now. One of the aspects that I love about this, and that I think Jordan touched on when we discussed the trailer a while back, was that it's a road trip kind of movie.
Yeah.
In a Winnebago. How cool is that?
Right, yeah.
You pack all these, like, the Suicide Squad is known for, like, having very eccentric personalities and stuff. And you know, on any road trip, even if it's just the most normal of people, like, it can get, you know, some crazy shenanigans can go down. And it's like, when you pack all these eccentric characters together on a road trip, like, you know it's going to get nuts, and boy, did it.
Yeah, and the dynamic of that, I think, is pretty, like you said, watching the characters interact in that kind of setting, which is something that you'd never think of with these kind of characters.
I love the little touch they threw in where, like, you'd see each one of them take turns, like, driving the RV. You know what I'm talking about? Like, it was just touches like that really made it feel like a road trip movie, you know?
right. And I like the fact that, you know, much like the Suicide Squad movie, they gave you the live action movie. They gave you a little intro as Amanda Waller is selecting her team to the characters that we're not necessarily familiar with, that are not household
with
names.
No neon Adam.
Right. Well, yeah. She.
Thank God.
Which is a positive, but because you know my stance on neon. Goes back to 1995 and then gets worse in 1997. And then
I thought it was never going to be used again until it was 19 years later.
Yeah, but at least there were no nipples in out of nowhere in 2017. But yeah, so
that's a great name for a podcast. That should be the title of this podcast, Nipples from Out of Nowhere.
You know what? When we do Batman and Robin, that'll be the subtitle.
Yeah, that's like one of those late night Showtime movies
it'll
or something.
Like
yeah.
It'll be like BBS, Dawn of Justice. It'll be the same thing.
Yeah.
So they give you intros on some of the newer characters. Like, again, they assume that everybody's familiar with Deadshot and Harley, so you don't get regurgitated intros on them. But you do get intros on Killer Frost, Bronze Tiger, and Copperhead.
Yeah,
you get some intros on, and I like those. Just mini little intros of just catching us up on for those who aren't familiar. I think it's a smart way to do things. And did you guys get the sense that? In terms of comparing to the Suicide Squad live action movie, that Bronze Tiger was essentially the Diablo character, the El Diablo character. Yeah. With the whole religious
I see where you're coming from there. Where he's the sympathetic one. He's the one who's not really a bad guy. He's you know, he has more morals, I guess, than all the other ones. And you know, I mean, and we see it. He has a great arc in this. He was really one of the standouts of this movie to me because he was one you could really sympathize with. And then he did get his happy ending, sort of. I mean, not an entirely happy ending, but you know, he got his redemption at the end, sort of like sort of like El Diablo did. So I totally see where you're coming there. Yeah, definitely.
And just his backstory I found fascinating because I'm not too familiar with the character. And so the backstory they presented, I'm like, I could, you know, I really, I can connect with this guy. I can sympathize with him. And again, the thing is, I don't like necessarily sympathizing with every villain because there's a reason why they're villains. You're supposed to not like them. But in this case, the ones they chose to make us sympathetic for, there's a blurred line there. Right.
Well, I don't think Bronze Tiger was really a villain. He's more like in this movie, the way he was presented is more of a Punisher type, where he won't, that's the whole thing in this movie. He won't take an innocent life. He's essentially just a vigilante who kills a la the Punisher. Yeah. And it's like he got arrested, apparently. And so he winds up having to work with Task Force X, but he's not actually a villain. So.
I mean, fair enough. You can make that distinction, but even still, I really enjoyed his like the backstory. Really sort of got me behind the character and you know really rooting for the character.
Totally.
Did anybody now? I don't know. I'm not too caught up on aside from the Flash TV show and some comics. The Killer Frost. That was totally different than what I'm accustomed to is that are there just for my frame of reference, Terrence, you have a knowledge of older DC stuff, especially after listening to your Everybody Loves the Drake podcast, you can get a sense of that. So do you know anything about Killer Frost? Is there more than one? Is there, because the origin is very, it wasn't Caitlin Frost. And so it confused me. I'm like, wait a minute, what's going on here?
Yeah, I know that there's been more than one definitely ice-powered type person. For a while, there was Ice Maiden, who was in the Justice League International for a while. But Killer Frost, the Caitlin Snow kind of version, was always a bad guy till I think the Flash had, you know, laid the groundwork for her to be – the Flash TV show laid the groundwork for her to be a good guy. And then the comics have kind of – you know, they started out with her as a bad guy, but now they're trying to make her a good guy with currently in Justice League America. Yeah. Batman like recruited her from Belrive prison and took her from Amanda Waller and is trying to redeem her. So I think this is more the classic evil Killer Frost, which I liked. And her little origin that you were talking about, I loved hers because it had this like effect on it that made it look like it was an old like movie, like a Super 8 movie or an old movie.
Like a filter,
grain kind of, and like little hairs and stuff. It was so cool. Yeah, those little openings were really awesome. And a Bronze Tiger, like you said, like he was really compelling. The voice acting on him was awesome.
You know what's funny? I thought it was for a second before I saw the credits. I thought it was Shamar Moore.
Cyborg.
And I'm like, oh, is that? And then I'm like, no, it's not.
And from Birds like of Prey, Adam.
Yes, Birds of Prey. You know what? For what it is, I enjoy that. You know, I enjoy that show. I won't make apologies.
That's why
for
I
that.
Brought it up because I know you love that show.
I won't make apologies for that. If you can talk about Catwoman all day long on this podcast, the Halle Berry version, then I can mention Birds of Prey every once in a while.
Oh, totally, dude, I'm with you on that show. I think that show's awesome.
Well, the fact that you're with me doesn't help me out because everybody knows your opinions are sometimes off the wall. See our Lego Flash movie review, so the character intros were cool, and the idea that you know, and one of the things I mentioned earlier that I thought they did better than the live action movie was, you know, they're dealing with a mystical plot line in the sense that Waller has sent the team out to retrieve a card that. If you possess it when you die, it's like a get out of hell. Well, that's what it's called. It's a get out of hell free card. So no matter what you've done, presumably, when you die and you are possessing this card, you will go to heaven or the equivalent of that. So Waller is looking for it because now she's from the beginning of the movie. They tell you that she's terminally ill, which I thought was quite striking and quite bold of them to do. Jordan, just talk about that for a second. The idea that they're presenting us with Amanda Waller who's terminally ill.
Yeah, I definitely thought that was an interesting way to go for it. And it really, I mean, it explains why she wants that card. It's like she wants, I mean, she realizes all the, you know, morally.
Oh, yeah, she's screwed.
Things
yeah,
she's yeah. done in her life. And she's like, oh, shit, yeah, I probably could use this card. So I thought it made sense, like, for her to have that as a motivation in this movie. And I mean, I just, and the way that ties up at the end, I mean, I know we're jumping around, but just the way that ties up her getting the card without realizing it's already been used, and sort of, I like Deadshot sort of acknowledging, yeah, giving it to the person who deserves it rather than, you know,
her. Terrence, what did you think about that? The fact that we started this movie off with, you know, the reasoning Amanda Waller is looking for that get out of hell free card is because she's dying. I thought that instantly raises the stakes, where some of these movies don't have these kind of stakes because you know nobody's gonna die, or none of the main players anyway.
Yeah, that's what I like about this, and definitely like Elseworlds and stuff, is anyone can live, anyone can die, and there's been kind of a thing in DC Comics, like, is Amanda Waller fat or is she thin? And this I thought was cool because it kind of acknowledged her losing weight and then gave a reason for it. If she was sick, if she had some disease or maybe a brain tumor or cancer, it would cause, you know, the weight loss. So I thought that was really cool. There were some twists in this movie I didn't pick up on that I was like, whoa, like I did not see the stripper being Dr. Fate, and I did not not see the Flashpoint connection. But I did somewhere about halfway through the movie think to myself, you know what? I bet your Bronze Tiger is going to get mortally wounded and get the get out of hell free card. Well, I saw that one coming, but I thought it was done great. Yeah.
And let's talk about that. Okay, so they get they're looking for this card, and the supposed possessor of this card, or the person who had it last, was Dr. Fate, who is going by the name of
Steel Maxim or something. Now
he's a stripper.
Now this is way better than the Dr. Fate they had in Lego DC Super Heroes The Flash, Adam.
Yes, but hold on a second. You can't show this to a 6-year-old.
I'm just saying my point being, this is a comedic take on Dr. Fate that works, whereas the singing Dr. Fate from the last movie we watched, not the last in the DC UAOM line, but the last technically animated movie in general, was trying to go for laughs too, and just completely fell flat, and was a iteration of Dr. Fate I couldn't stand. Whereas this, first of all, it's not supposed to be Kent Nelson. It's not supposed to be. This is just this guy. This works because it's just this new original character who happens to have inherited the helmet of Naboo temporarily, and is just hilarious. I love this guy.
Okay,
voiced by Greg Grunberg. He was so funny. Oh my goodness.
But again, let me just reference that. Lego Flash was made for 6-year-olds or under. That's why it is what it is. Whereas this, like, all right, Jordan, when you have children, show them this version of Dr. Fate. See how that goes over.
That's not my point. That's not the point.
That's what you can't compare the two. It's apples and oranges.
That's not the point.
You're comparing an Earth fruit to a fruit on Krypton.
That's not the point. That's not the point I was trying to make.
Okay, you prefer this version. We get it. Now, my question is, so you kind of, is it confirmed that this is a new character?
I actually looked it up after I watched the movie. I could be wrong. I could have missed something, but I believe that Steel Maxim is a new character.
Because I'm like, when did Kent Nelson, well, he said that wasn't his real name. Obviously, it wasn't his real name. But my thought process was, when did Kent Nelson become a stripper? What continuity is this?
This is a completely different character. I mean, this is a completely different character. I mean, sort of like in Young Justice, how how Zatara inherits the helmet of Naboo after Kent Nelson. That's sort of the same deal here. It's just somebody else who inherits the helmet of Naboo.
Because I know that in certain comics there have been others that have had the helmet, right?
And yeah. He says that in the movie too. He says there's been lots of Dr. Fates.
Right. So
when they're sitting around the campfire, yeah.
Even in Smallville, I'll reference, because I always like to bring up my Smallville reference. Chloe Sullivan had the helmet of Naboo temporarily.
Wow. Let's not touch on Chloe Sullivan or Allison Mack and the news, because that's a whole different kind of animal.
Well,
let's not go there.
All I'm gonna say is I understand where you're coming from, Adam. I love Chloe Sullivan so much that I have to remove, like, when I think about Smallville, when I watch Smallville, I just have to sort of, what I've been trying to do is just sort of remove that from my, not remove my memory, obviously, it's important to acknowledge, but just to sort of not think about that when I'm trying to think about Smallville, you know, just because I love the character so much that I don't want it tarnished by,
that's some weird news. We're not going to touch on that. We're not going to go there.
Right. My point. But do you see what I'm saying?
I totally get what you're saying, for sure.
Okay.
But so I knew there was a basis for other people having the helmet. I was like, all right, I guess there's a stripper version of Dr. Fate in some comic, but I guess not. I guess it's an original, which is cool. Which is and I love the. I think it was Deadshot that called him Magic Mike. Like, what do you?
He
says to Walters, like, what do you want us to do with Magic Mike or whatever it is? And you're right, Greg Grunberg, I think, was fantastic in the voice.
I had a similar when they kicked him off the RV. Eventually, I was kind of disappointed. It was sort of like Otis in Superman 2 when he doesn't get on the. What I was hoping so badly that he would get on the hot air balloon because I love him so much. It was sort of the same deal with Steel Maxim here, because I was like, man, I wanted to see him keep going because he was hilarious.
Right. Yeah. So we have, but I like this character better than Otis any day of the week. So then you have a scenario where we have Vandal Savage, his daughter, which is what's her name?
Scandal.
Weapon X, X the 23.
I'm like, wait a minute. As I'm watching,
I remember her from Logan. Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. Anybody want to define plagiarism here? Is Warner Brothers going to get sued? Because this is a little too close for. So Scandal Savage, is that the name?
Scandal Savage.
And is she a comics character?
Yes.
Okay, she is. Okay. I didn't stay until, I didn't let the credits go on that long. The person with her girlfriend or her partner, or whatever, however you want to phrase it.
Yeah.
Who was that?
Her name was...
She's from Apocalypse.
Yeah, and I'm like, wait a minute. Yeah. At first I was like, is that Maxima? That's what I thought.
No, it's not her. I'm trying to remember what her name is here. I'll look it up, actually, real quick, so... Give me one sec. I will look up her name.
Well, while you're doing that, I just wanted to say one of the great things about this movie is how many DC characters are in this. There are so many. And it's all like the B cast or the C cast. And for someone who loves DC comics like I do, and I pretty much read every DC comic that comes out every month, to see a movie like this that doesn't have Green Lantern, doesn't have Superman, doesn't have The Flash, doesn't have Batman he has a little cameo in there, but not as the main character. No Wonder Woman, yet so many DC characters. They're all unique. They all are true to themselves. And there was never a moment where I thought, oh, well, Deadshot wouldn't do that. Or, Bronze Tiger wouldn't do that. It was so good.
First of all, her name's Knockout.
Okay. Knockout, that's right. Yeah.
I totally agree with that, and I hate to keep harping on it, but I totally agree that every character was in character, first of all. But I also want to say that's very unlike the previous film that we reviewed, which that was not the case.
Jordan, get over the fact that Batman rubbed Ace's belly. Like, deal with it.
I'm never going to get over him making that noise.
Good Lord.
Twice in one movie. That was absurd.
You know what? I hope somebody makes a gif of that so I could just torture you with it on Twitter.
Oh.
but just to echo your point, Terrence, I I love the fact that the Suicide Squad has become, like, people can say whatever they want about that movie, but that movie has made the Suicide Squad a household name to the degree where this movie did not need a cameo from Batman or an extended Batman plotline to sell the movie or carry
it. I mean, the first time they tried to do a Suicide Squad movie in the DCU AOM line, they had to title it a Batman movie in order to feel confident enough to make it. So, that was, of course, before the live-action Suicide Squad movie comes out. Now we get this one after the live-action movie, and they actually can call it a Suicide Squad movie. Right. And you're right, Batman, I mean, the Thomas Wayne Batman does make a cameo, but there's no Justice Leaguers in this movie.
So people can't argue that movie, regardless of what people think of it, had an impact, and I think a positive one in this case for sure. So I liked it, and I enjoyed the fact that and you know, I love Batman, who's my favorite fictional character, with Superman following right behind. But the fact that I didn't see Batman proper, and I'm using air quotes, I was happy about it. I'm like, good. Like, I don't need to see him here. And so Vandal Savage has basically sent his daughter and Knockout to retrieve the get out of hell. I keep wanting to say get out of jail. But get out of hell. For him now, and at the same time, you have Reverse Flash with.
Thank God, not the Reverse Flash.
Oh, stop it! Leave that movie alone. Get over it, jeez, man! It's gonna be.
It's funny because
I can't wait to see what DC products you choose to parent your kids with. I can't wait.
Well, it's just I wouldn't keep giving a crap if it wasn't like the very next DC animated movie that gets released has so many of the same characters and portrays them so much better.
Just to piss you off, when you have a kid, I'm gonna send him every Lego Flash. I'm gonna buy it now, all the Lego Flash memorabilia I can find. I'm gonna store it, and then as soon as you have a child, I'm gonna send it over. A nice care package, and I'll get one of those plush Ace the Bat Hounds too.
My goodness!
When you squeeze it makes that noise. Yeah.
Oh boy.
Oh my goodness.
Hey, can I just say, because you mentioned it about the movie, and I wanted to say, because I've always liked Suicide Squad or Task Force X or whatever you want to call it, but one of the things, and I like the movie, but one of the things I don't like about the movie or could knock about the movie is I thought like it lost a little of the edge. Like there's really nobody gets killed. Yeah. They're fighting, you know, zombies. Yeah. Well, I was going to say they're fighting like zombie monsters. You don't really see people getting killed. Slipknot, who's in it for like 30 seconds, gets killed. And then El Diablo at the end, who might be coming back in the sequel. So maybe he didn't die.
I hope not.
You know,
I didn't like the character, but I have a very firm stance on like resurrections.
Well, I'm just saying, it's just kind of shows you there wasn't like a real huge body count in Suicide Squad. And then even the comics, it's become really soft in the comics. You know, they're not a lot of killings. You know, Suicide Squad, there should be two or three members of the team that get killed every mission. Like it's called Suicide Squad for a reason, you know. And this movie had that. Like you had members getting killed. You had people getting killed. You had bad guys getting killed. Like it was a true Suicide Squad. Right. It was pretty awesome.
We didn't even talk about that opening scene with the first iteration of Task Force X in this movie.
I know.
The train.
Yes. Like right off the bat, it's like people are dying. And I'm like, going there. And
they took total advantage of their R rating too with who was it? Was it Count Vertigo who you literally saw his head like goodness, that was
like the effects on
and Punch from Punch and Judy too. You saw his head blow up. And you know, the thing is too, it's rated R, but I felt like everything in it to give it an R rating was part of the story. I didn't feel like, oh, they just threw that in to make it an R.
It wasn't forced,
Yeah, exactly. Like some of the Dark Knight Returns. I felt I like that, but I felt some of the stuff thrown in there was like, oh, they just put that in there to make it an R. This
well, Dark Knight Returns was an R. That was an R.
Was that PG-13? Yeah, some one of them I saw was R. I can't remember which one.
The ones that have been R are Killing Joke, Justice League Dark, and Batman by Gaslight.
I think it was Gotham by Gaslight that I saw.
Maybe it was the Batgirl Batman sex scene on the roof. I don't know.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah. And hey, I'm watching the movie with on mute as we're recording this. And if you guys watch it again and pause when they pass billboards, the billboards are pretty hysterical. It's like there's some Easter eggs. They just passed one that was for Harry Palm's Motel on exit 69.
Oh, you know what? I saw that. I did catch that one.
I did not notice that. That's cool. But yeah, you're right. Like the visuals of the head being exploded was graphic, but it was like it's warranted in a Suicide Squad film. And you're right. I wish the film would have been rated R, but it wasn't.
And Deadshot with his mercy killing when Julie's about to get her head blown off and he just shoots her first. I was like, man, that was a badass scene.
Yeah. No, he was great. The whole thing with the little subplot with his daughter.
Great.
That was put in and because it gives him and Bronze Tiger. I keep wanting to call him White Tiger for some damn reason. I don't understand why. Bronze Tiger gives them a chance to bond, right? That's their connective tissue, sort of thing.
And I do like that ending scene where he gets to see her when he finally finds her and gets to see her, his daughter again. But I wanted to mention about that opening scene though, Punch and Julie. I came to really love them thanks to Tom King's I Am Suicide arc in Batman. And so I thought it was I really love those characters thanks to that. And so I thought it was awesome to see them here in this movie, even though it was just briefly at the beginning.
And I like when Harley says, yeah, I was giving her fashion tips or whatever, because there is a visual similarity between the two characters. So it's like the fact that they alluded to that was kind of cool. Definitely.
Isn't Bronze Tiger in the I Am Suicide story too?
He was, yeah.
Yeah,
was.
Yeah, and he's got like an addiction problem or something. Yeah, so
I Am Bane as well.
I Am Bane, that's right. Yeah,
they should really do more with that character. That's a character that could.
Well, he's been on Arrow.
Well, I know that, but I'm saying within the comics, they could.
Certainly
do more with that character than they are.
The scene where they're all in the Winnebago and they're talking about heaven and like Bronze Tiger starts talking and they all just stop and listen to him as he talks about like, man, that is such a good scene. And each one is like giving their version of heaven, which is fits with each character's like craziness or psychosis. It's so good.
And that's where I got the El Diablo kind of comparison. That's when it really kicked in. I'm like, oh, this is where they're going with it. This is where they're taking this character in that same similar direction. But one thing I wanted to
bring up that we touched on, but I forgot to mention this when we mentioned it. You're bringing up Amanda Waller's weight loss in this movie, and I have a little theory, not really a theory, but I think what they were going for there is I know in the New 52 basically is when we saw that's when they introduced her being thinner. The New 52.
Yeah.
And in the Green Lantern movie, too, the actress who, I think that was
Angela Bassett. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. There, too. And I don't think they ever gave an explanation for it in the New 52. Like, I mean, obviously, it was just a reboot universe. So it's just like, oh, Amanda Waller's, she's lost some weight now.
She pulled an Oprah Winfrey, and that's all, you know.
Yeah, and they got criticized for that pretty heavily of being like anti-obesity and stuff. So, yeah.
I just thought it was interesting. Since this shared universe is so heavily based off the New 52, I thought it was interesting that they provided an explanation for it that wasn't provided in the actual comic. So I just thought that was interesting.
They're probably like, we're gonna get there's gonna be a shitstorm if we don't give an explanation. So we'll give one. But to go back to my original point before we kind of went all over the place, which we tend to do on this podcast.
But, sorry about that.
So we have, Vandal Savage sends his daughter and what was her name?
Knockout
to get him the get out of hell free card. And then at the same time, you have Reverse Flash. He had who was on his? It was Killer
Blockbuster.
Him, Blockbuster,
and Banshee.
And Banshee, and then eventually, sort of, Killer Frost does a flip flop and double crosses just about everybody. But I thought one of the things I thought that was the fact that both Vandal Savage and Reverse Flash would go looking for that get out of hell free card. I think not so much because obviously when you look at those characters and what they've done, okay, yeah, they would need it. But the fact, you know, one is an immortal, so I'm thinking, why would he need it? And the other one, like his healing factor, I'm like, he's, you know, the fact that they both, well, it was striking to me. And then but both their explanations, I think, made a lot of sense.
Let's go ahead and talk about that, dude, the Reverse Flash one in particular.
Oh, yeah, the connection.
I feel like I felt like I should have seen it coming, because when they announced the voice cast for this and they had C. Thomas Howell reprising his role from the Flashpoint Paradox, at first I was just like, oh, that's cool that he's coming back because he was really good in that. And I do not know why I did not make the connection.
Yeah,
Justice League the Flashpoint Paradox is technically part of the shared universe because it basically resets the timeline, even though it's still Kevin Conroy's Batman and not Jason O'Mara's Batman at the end. I still think they should have had it be Jason O'Mara's Batman, but it basically, at the end of that movie, it's technically supposed to be set in this new shared universe, and then you have the Parademon tease in the post-credit scene in that movie. Yes. And so that's technically part of this universe, and so this is the same Reverse Flash as you saw in that, and the way they reveal it, I literally, like, my jaw dropped. I was like, oh, shit, that's nuts.
I honestly didn't expect, I'm with you, I didn't see that coming. But when I saw it, I said, holy crap, this is the most like, I know these movies are all connected in one universe.
Yeah.
But this is the most, aside from the voice actors of the other one, like Jason O'Mara when he comes back, and the animation style, this is the most, like, you know, connected, if you will.
It's been 5 years since that movie, and they come and bring that back and just tie it in beautifully. It was awesome.
And then I'm like, damn, that movie was so good. As I'm watching, I'm like, damn, that movie was so good. So I love the connection. And then, but then, like, even Vandal Savage, the fact that he mentions, you know, ever since Metahumans, you know, I've escaped death. I've had to escape death so many times. Like, even him, like, he's basically, you know, sort of giving a shout out to how powerful and how threatening, the superheroes and the Metahumans are to him.
It was the same thing he said in Justice League Doom, where he's talking to the Legion of Doom about how basically the Justice League is the greatest. He's lived for all these years and years and years, and nothing threatened him really up until the Justice League came along.
And you know what I liked too was the fact that they went with the whole he was Alexander the Great,
Julius Caesar.
I love that. That to me, that one, I'm like, that's.
Smallville sort of did that too with Curtis Knox.
But I do love when they do that, and I thought that was great.
Because Smallville had Curtis Knox. Like, Curtis Knox was like, he was Jack the Ripper. On Smallville, so they it was the same theme of him being, you know, in past, like he is these, like, I guess real life villains in the past that, you know,
that connection was cool.
Jordan, I was gonna say, Jordan, I had the same reaction as you with the Reverse Flash reveal, because one of the things I liked in this, I saw the Reverse Flash and I thought, wow, he looks a lot like the same animation from Flashpoint, and I love Flashpoint. And then when he's chasing after the Winnebago, I was like, why is he not, like, there already? And Deadshot, who we haven't really talked about Christian Slater yet, but he's awesome as Deadshot.
He's another one who was reprising his role from previous media, because he played Deadshot in Justice League Action, the animated series, and the webisodes. He's been Deadshot there.
Okay.
So he was another one that, when they announced his voice cast, I was like, okay, so he's another one that I was very excited to hear reprise their role, because I loved him in Justice League Action.
And that's probably why you didn't see it, because you figured, well, it's Christian Slater from Justice League Action. So it's like,
right.
That was like, okay, they're just using actors they've used before.
And Tara Strong too, of course. Yeah. Good point. That's probably why it didn't even cross my mind about C. Thomas Howell, but yeah.
Yeah. But he mentions in the Winnebago, he says, why isn't he not here? He's slowing down. Something's wrong. And then at one point, the Flash, the Reverse Flash Zoom jumps up to put a tracker on the Vandal Savage's flying helicarrier.
Yeah.
And like he starts bleeding out on his face. I'm like, where is he bleeding from? So then when he takes the mask off and you see that hole in his head and you're just like, oh, no way. And they do the little flashback to the Flashpoint movie. It was so good. Yeah.
I still can't believe that even after both those two sort of teases setting that up, it still did not occur to me. And like I remember thinking the same thing when he was chasing the RV and he's like, I was like, shouldn't he be a lot faster? And then Deadshot brought it up too, and it's like, okay, that is a story point, cool, but it still didn't occur to me why he was slow. I was like, so when they pulled the reveal, I was like, oh my goodness, that's amazing.
Yeah, no, I kind of wish not in the same way, but I wish these movies, you know, the incontinuity one had more connective tissue like this.
I feel like the Batman ones have a lot of connective tissue. Yeah, Son of Batman.
Well, they're all
Batman
yeah.
versus Robin.
Yeah, that's a direct sequel, like literally, yeah.
Yeah.
So it's different, but I wish more of the Justice League ones had this kind of reference, you know, along something like that.
Yeah, that's fair. Question for you guys. The inclusions of Tobias Whale and Professor Pig in this movie. I want to talk about those for a second and ask you a question about that. First of all, I want to say, I talk about this all the time, how I think Professor Pig is one of the most underrated Batman villains, and I love him. I was not real pleased with James Urbaniak in the role. I thought that I didn't think he was quite creepy enough playing the role in this particular movie, but I still really like the inclusion of Professor Pig. But my question for you guys, do you think that the inclusion of those two, because those two characters, Professor Pig had a pretty substantial, important role in the plot, but Tobias Whale could have been pretty much anybody. And I'm curious whether you think that the inclusion of those two characters was specifically due to them being heavily featured in Tobias Whale, obviously, is the big bad of this season of Black Lightning, and Professor Pig played a big role on this season of Gotham. So I was wondering whether there was some synergy going on there where they were like, let's throw those guys in because they're being featured heavily in live action right now.
Terrence, what do you think?
Yeah, most likely. And then they probably want to see, you know, if the fans like it and the response is good, they could then, you know, maybe come out with a movie with the focused on one of them as the villain as well.
Yeah.
And I was kind of surprised how little they were in it, but yet they were still really good. Even Two-Face. Two-Face was in it for only like a minute and a half, but Two-Face was so cool in it.
Hey,
yeah.
That minute and a half of Two-Face was better than all of what Tommy Lee Jones did, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah.
I think Terrence is right. And we got to remember that these movies have proven to be used as like a sort of testing ground to see what hits.
I mean, Batman Assault on Arkham was a testing ground for the live action Suicide Squad.
And thank God that hit because we got Margot Robbie as Harley Quinn, and I will never say no to more of that.
Justice League Dark, the animated movie. I mean, we know there's a Justice League Dark live action movie.
Yeah, Walter Hamada is gonna get moving on that, by the way. He comes from horror background.
Oh, that's true. I see where you're
going.
I thought you had heard something about like
no,
that was.
No, I have no sources. Nobody talks to me.
Well, I don't know. I thought you might have seen some news that I had missed.
I have zero sources.
I wasn't discounting that, but what I was really thinking about was that you might have heard some news that I had missed or something.
If I call Warner Brothers, they say, "Who the hell are you?" How did you get?
Well, you brought up some news that I had missed. What was it? Last episode, two episodes ago, you brought up some news that I had missed. So I thought that was what you were talking about, and I was like, "Oh, are they moving forward?"
You give me way too much credit, sir. I'll tell you that. but no, yeah. So I think they were definitely placed there on purpose, and also, you know, as a test ground, do these characters hit, and maybe we'll use them in a movie. And look, like I said, earlier when we were talking about the Wonder Woman thing, Vandal Savage, could he be in Wonder Woman?
It's possible.
A possibility, huh? Right? So who knows? But and speaking of Vandal Savage, I got to say that fight between he and Bronze Tiger, where he's just slicing him. It wasn't Bronze Tiger. Sorry, it was Reverse Flash.
It was you're talking about Reverse Flash. Sorry, and
Bronze. Yeah.
Yeah.
Death another, by a thousand reverse. Cuts.
Yeah. That was what a fight that was. That was great. That was a cool scene.
And so was the Deadshot Bronze Tiger fight, yes, where they end up on the fire escape and it crashes. That was done really well. And even Bronze Tiger's like, I was holding back. Because I was kind of like, they say Bronze Tiger's like one of the greatest martial artists in the world. And I'm like, why is Deadshot going toe-to-toe with him? And he's like, I was holding back. Now I'm not going to. And then the full fire escape crashes in on him. That was pretty awesome.
And I'm glad they put that in. And I'm glad that they show that. Because if you're going to say Bronze Tiger is the best fighter, you have to give me some proof of that. You have to back that claim up, because in a world where there's Batman and Black Canary proposes herself as one of the better, or she's talking about as one of the better hand-to-hand combat people. So
we haven't seen Black Canary in this universe.
No. And I that's another character that I think Green Arrow is ripe for a movie. One of these.
Oh, movies, definitely.
I'd rather see her in a Birds of Prey movie. Oh, I mean, I can't believe they haven't done Batgirl in the Birds of Prey animated film. That's considering
how the hell have they done that?
Yeah, the series. I mean, I know the series, it only lasted one season, but it definitely has a cult following. I mean, you see at conventions, like they pack the house for when somebody from that show is there. And I don't know, don't know why that was canceled, because it was a phenomenal show.
Oh, I'm glad you like it too.
I got the DVDs right here. Yeah.
We all like that show, I guess. Yeah. At Dragon Con last year, I went to a Birds of Prey reunion panel where they had all three of them. They had Dinah Meyer and Rachel Carsten and what's Huntress's name again? What's her
actress's name? Dina Meyer? Ashley Scott.
Ashley Scott, yes, thank you. I had all three of them at the panel, and they were it was an awesome panel. But they had a awesome reunion panel there. But what I was going to say was, regarding the background of the Birds of Prey movie, potentially an animated movie, Batgirl was teased at the end of Batman Bad Blood in her Burnside costume, and we still haven't gotten payoff of that tease. So I think they do have plans for Batgirl in this new 52 inspired shared universe. So I'm excited to see what they do. Perhaps it could be a Batgirl in the Birds of Prey movie. That would be cool.
Though I really do want to see her in the new 52 Gail Simone run costume, because
it's not gonna be that. It's gonna be the
first. Yeah, I know, but personally, that's my favorite of the two.
I like both personally.
It's just
I like
personal both. Aesthetic. But you're right, Terrence. How they've not done that? And by the way, I have not met any of them, but my claim to fame with Birds of Prey is that Ashley Scott once responded to one of my tweets recently. About a Birds of Prey revival on the DC streaming service, which is I still would watch, but has fallen on deaf ears, as far as I know. But if Warner Bros. Wants to make that happen on the DC, like, you've got my money, I'd give you more for that. I'd pay more than the subscription for that show. But yeah, she responded to my tweet about that, so I was. My younger self was all giddy over that. So because I'm not gonna lie, I had such a crush on her when that show was on. Still do. But that's besides the point. But yeah, no. So both fight sequences. That's why I was getting confused. Because I wanted to talk about one, then I should be talking about the other.
They're both awesome. Yeah, even better.
And that's what it is. Like the choreographer of the fight sequences for this animated movie were phenomenal, and just like the sheer we see people losing hands, we touched upon people getting their heads blown off, and you actually see it. And so it's just like what I will give this movie is taking advantage of the R rating without forcing it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Terrence brought it up earlier. Because a lot of movies, I think, when they get an R, whether it be live action or animated, when they get that R rating, it's like, oh, now we gotta you know, ham fist some violence in here just to warrant it. And this didn't do that, and I like that. Since I've been doing it all episode long, I also want another nod to the live action movie was the opening credits with the bullets and all that. It was like that. It was like the Deadshot. Remember when his bio came up on the screen in the Suicide Squad movie, and they had like the bullets.
It was like raining bullets. Yeah.
So it was. Similar to that. I'm like, oh, that's a nice touch.
And the closing credits too had a lot of bullet stuff too. That was really cool.
Yeah. And even what I want to comment on is, I think every character at one point or another that was on the Suicide Squad acknowledged Harley Quinn's sheer craziness.
Yeah.
Like they make a point to be like she's nuts. There's a point where she's running into the motel room because they think they found Killer Frost.
Yeah.
And she, I don't know, like she's at the top of her lungs, you know, they're trying to be all clandestine and quiet. And she's there at the top of her lungs yelling and screaming and running like you know.
I think they used that shot in the trailer. That was a good trailer shot. Yeah. With her running towards the screen.
And like, she checks the refrigerator for Killer Frost.
Yeah. And
I love that because it brought back how she was at the very beginning in the animated series. She was just like this crazy person. You didn't know anything about her. In recent years, DC has made her, well, her comic book, she's, I don't know, a little bit of everything, but they've made her very sane and a genius, very sympathetic.
Her comic book is like Deadpool now, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, it is. And she's brilliant. And I just love this back to just plain old crazy with a bat, but a heck of a fighter. So you'd want her on the team. And no matter what, she's just not fazed by anything.
I think what they've done with the animation on Harley in this one is like it's a nice marriage of you know, the Arkham games, the new
52,
and Margot Robbie. I think it's a nice marriage of the three, and then again imbuing her personality with something more along the lines of the animated series. So I thought they, like, visually her character, they had all the right nods. And then I'm a big fan of Tara Strong as the voice of Harley Quinn. I mean, second to Margot Robbie, you know, she's my vote for Harley Quinn. And that's not knocking the original because I love the original. But so I was totally on board and I loved her role in this. And even the fact that she didn't dominate the proceedings, which they could have very, very well have done given her popularity, right? But they chose not to do that, which I thought was...
Yeah, this was very much Deadshot's the main character. He's the main lead, not Harley Quinn. She's just a background character. Yeah, they did a great job in that.
Yeah, it was... Go ahead.
Okay, I was just gonna say, yeah, Harley, I found hilarious in this movie. I really liked her, and I totally am with you on Tara Strong. But I wanted to just point out while we were talking about another comedic character in this movie that I just really enjoyed was, and this is another, like Bronze Tiger, this character was another sort of surprise for me that I wasn't expecting that they were going to be this awesome in this movie. But Copperhead was so funny.
Yeah. when he looks at the old man with ice cream and just hisses at him.
Yeah, and he hisses at him. Yeah, and he drops his ice cream. Yes. That was hilarious.
And there's another scene. He's just like, I'm bored now. I'm going to leave. And yeah. Bored now. He didn't need to do much to have a big impact. And he looked awesome.
Yeah, he looked fantastic.
You brought that. I had forgotten about that, Terrence. So what you had brought up, I wanted to point that out, but I couldn't remember what it was. Yeah, when he said bored now, that reminded me. One of the reasons it cracked me up even more was because it reminded me of the way Rorschach speaks, where he where he doesn't say I'm bored now. He just says bored. I don't know how to describe that. But
Rorschach's very matter of fact, very, you know, like minimal. minimalistic, I guess is the word. And
there's something that always cracks me up about, I mean, Rorschach's not a comedic character, but the way he talks does crack me up a lot of times. And it was the same deal with Copperhead. Yeah. It was so funny.
Yeah. and the other thing, one of the things they did, I think, real well is not making, with the exception of Bronze Tiger and a little bit with Deadshot, not making the other characters overly heroic, because when you do that, I think it takes away a little bit from the point of it all. The fact that these are villains, right? So, I thought, like, look at what Killer Frost was doing, right? She basically double-crossed everybody for her own personal gain, her own wealth, right? That's what you'd expect.
And she still didn't get the card.
Right. And same with Boomerang, Captain Boomerang. He was going to do the same thing. He was going to take the card, and then Bronze Tiger caught him, right? So,
And can I say, the card is such a cool device, because in the beginning, I was like, okay, get out of hell free card. Okay, blah, blah, blah. And it wasn't until the end, when you start to see them fight over the card, that you realize what a cool plot device it is, because you can't kill the person who has it and take it from them, because then it's null. So like that, the fact that if you're holding it, you've got this like leverage of everyone wants to kill you, but they can't kill you. That is just such a cool movie.
Like, I don't watch it anymore, but it's like Survivor when they had the immunity idol. It's like that kind of thing.
And the way what Vandal Savage in particular did, this is what I was talking about with Professor Pig, where he literally had him put it inside his body so that if they tried to take it out, that he would die. So then it would be useless, and he would get it anyway. So that was so cool.
And I also love how Reverse Flash did the vibrating thing, which of course we've seen in live action on the Flash a lot of times, the vibrating hand.
Yeah.
I think that was a nice.
He did that to get the bomb out of Killer Frost's neck.
Yeah.
And then he was in a lot of pain from doing it. So that was part of the mystery of like, what is going on with this guy?
And I love the fact that it shows you, like, the way they subtly showed you what was wrong with him, instead of, you know, like, they kept the mystery going, which I like. A lot of these movies can you know, blow the mystery too quickly. So
yeah.
So I love the way it was all handled.
I got to make a really off-color joke real quick, because it just sprung to mind for me.
Well, if you're going to do it on any podcast, this would be the one.
Right? What would happen? What would happen if the penguin got, if Danny DeVito's penguin got Speed Force powers?
Oh God!
Good Lord. Instead of the French flipper trick.
Yeah. I mean, he was that guy. Like, I didn't realize. You see, now you threw me off. But we talked about this on our Batman Returns podcast. But as I've gotten older and watched that movie, man, you realize how perverted he was. Like, how horny this guy was. And it's like, well, how did this go over my head as a kid? Because now I'm watching, I'm like, oh my God, did he just say what I think, and then he did, and I'm like, oh boy, I'm like, so we're going there. But and just to, like, the crudeness, like, it wasn't there too often, but like you were saying, Terrence, with the Easter egg and with the signs, you know, there's one part at the motel where they think they found her, and I don't know, I think it was Harley was getting all excited, or one of the other guys, I think, no, it was Boomerang who said something to the effect, all right, that was easy, and then all of a sudden, Deadshot's like, let's not all give each other hand jobs just yet. I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Even though you know it's an R-rated movie and like you've gotten used to that, when you hear that, it still gives you pause for a second. It's like, oh yeah, right, we're going. That's where we're going.
But it fits. It fit with the character. It fit with the scene. It didn't feel forced just to make it an R rating. And there's bizarre stuff in here, like watching Copperhead drive a school bus and then open the door for Deadshot, like it was like he's a kid coming to school in the morning, was hilarious. But yet it all fit within the story of them stealing a bus at the rest stop and all that. It was great.
And that's the thing I want to I want to stress as we sort of come near the end, is that when you're doing a Suicide Squad movie, it should be off the wall crazy. It should be hyper violent. It should be, you know,
A high body count. Yeah,
there should be a death toll. And I hope that, you know, I don't know that they ever will, but I would love to see, you know, hopefully this does well enough that maybe it'll change Warner Brothers' tune in terms of how they handle the live action follow-ups. Because, you know, R-rated superhero films, or in this case, supervillain films, when done with the right characters, can work. And there shouldn't be a fear of, well, are we minimalizing our box office? Are we alienating the audience? Because the proof is now the pudding, right?
So, I mean, didn't Deadpool sort of show everybody that?
Yeah, it's just like you gotta find the, it's gotta be right with the characters. And what I hope Warner Bros. Understands going forward is that if you're gonna do an R-rated film where there is death and blood and this, Suicide Squad's one of the ones that you can do and take advantage of that. And so, you know, like I said, this movie to me is like, and the other thing that it did, I think, even again, I really enjoyed the movie that we got with the live action, but it took a supernatural kind of concept in the, you know, get out of hell free card, and still found a way to ground it so that the Suicide Squad chasing after it made sense.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, I think I pointed out when the description for this movie came out and it was talking about them going after a mystical object, I remember being a little bit trepidatious about that, but, because we saw how that went in the Suicide Squad live action movie.
And that's the thing.
But seeing it here, figuring out what it actually was just this card. It's not a magical circle in the sky with all. I mean, let me not get into that, but
yeah, but no,
it's
but
just this card, and so yeah, it's very grounded.
But my point is this: they kept it grounded.
Yeah, even it's grounded.
There was a mystical, mystical threat, which is, you know, in total opposition of, you know, the belly dancing enchantress routine at the end.
Exactly.
With all that green, that I'm still not sure what was going on there.
So I should be, in hindsight, I shouldn't have been trepidatious about it, because it worked out great, actually.
I think there's a lesson to be learned there as well. Because notice, none of the Suicide Squad actually fought. Well, I could be wrong. Maybe Ditch. But none of them actually tried really hard to go toe-to-toe with Vandal Savage, an immortal, right?
No, Banshee takes him out.
Right.
And then Killer Frost freezes him. Right, and then that's
superpower.
Yeah.
But there's a superpower. Yeah. Like, you don't see Harley Quinn or Deadshot engaging in combat, in direct combat with Vandal Savage. So it's like, if you're gonna go that route, then make the characters that are superpowered or have abilities be the ones to go after the enhanced threat. Whereas, you know, the movie in the third act had them all fighting Enchantress, and really, if she wanted to, she could have wiped them all. She could have wiped them all out, right? If we were going for body count and whatnot. So, I think there's a lesson to be learned with. There's a couple of lessons to be learned with this film, for the live action series going forward, and so yeah, I mean, like I said, I can't say enough good about this movie. I think it's fantastic, and I hope. I loved, for example, I enjoyed Gotham by Gaslight. I don't know how Terrence feels about Gotham by Gaslight. But the last couple have really been going in a strong direction. And I think, you know, I'm hopeful going forward with the next crop of them that they're going to continue on this path in terms of the quality. I mean, Batman Ninja is one, and I'll admit it because Jordan keeps harping on me to do so. I was not looking forward to at the beginning, because...
Well, that one, Adam, is not in the DCU AOL.
Right, line. No. But that, in general, separate. Just as being the next one out, like, I wasn't looking forward to. But, you know, I've changed my tune because I saw the English translation. I can understand what the hell's going on. And it's getting good reviews from WonderCon, so that's positive. But the next one coming out from the main line is Death of Superman, right?
Yeah.
And that one, they're going to do a proper translation of the whole thing, where it's a two-part or so. I'm hoping that is done proper. Like the first one was, it was okay, but it wasn't really an adaptation of that story. So I'm and you know me, Jordan, and I'm okay if a story is not a direct blow-by-blow adaptation of, like, it doesn't have to, like, these movies don't have to be.
Yeah.
But if you're going to do it, the DNA of the actual story should be there. And I think a lot of that was missing the first time around with Death of Superman, so I'm hoping that this will raise the ship. But going forward, these last two have given me a renewed... Because something Terrence is right. Some of these, because of the volume of them, some of them can get stale.
You were like me in that you actually liked Batman and Harley Quinn a lot, right?
Well, because I can put it into context that, look, it's got the same animation, but it's not. It's not the same... Like, I can divorce myself from Batman the Animated Series continuity. Whereas I know some people, when they see that voice cast and that animation style, they can't. And that's cool if you can. But I'm one that it's like, for whatever, look, is it the greatest one of the bunch? No. But do I hate it as, you know, do I hate it vehemently like some people do? No. But Terrence, I understand Terrence's point where some of them can get stale because of the volume of the amount they put out. But, you know, the last two have given me a renewed optimism that maybe, you know, the winds are changing and we're going to get more unique and you know, engaging and stuff like we've got with this and Gotham by Gaslight. So I'm excited, but this was great. Is there anything else you guys want to bring up that we forgot or that we didn't give enough time to before we do a wrap up?
I can't think of anything. I think we covered everything.
Yeah, we went all the way. We went all over the place, but I think we got pretty much everything.
Yeah.
Well, Jordan, I guess
Jordan, anything you want to bring up before we?
No, you know, I think we really did cover. I mean, I'm sure as soon as we hang up, then I'll think of something. But
we missed that subplot. But no, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, I guess we can just give our letter grades then.
All right. So Terrence, you're the guest of honor. So what is your letter grade for this movie?
Yeah, I would give it an A+. I'd give it a high A++, whatever the highest you can give. This hit on all cylinders for me. Action, story, characterization, everything moved. One of the things I have trouble with these movies with is if they're an adaptation of something, such as The Killing Joke or All-Star Superman, I tend to either don't like it because I'm like, well, I've already read this. Like, I've read the comic. It's nothing new. I'm not surprised. Yeah. Or they leave stuff out. I'm like, oh, but I love that one scene in the comic and they left it out. Or, you know, so I can't win when it's an adaptation. Since this was an original story, it was fantastic because I never knew what was coming next, where it was going. It had some great twists and turns and people dying. The body count in this is huge. But that's great because anybody could have died at any time.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it was – I loved it for that. The music in it was great. The voice cast, everyone was great. There was no one where I thought, ooh, that doesn't sound like Boomerang or Deadshot. There was – humor that was funny, but not just like corny, but just enough of it where it wasn't like, hey, let's try to like make everything a joke.
Yeah.
But there, so it hit for me, it hit on everything and was fantastic. And I love the ending. I mean, I guess that's the one thing we didn't really talk about.
Yeah, okay,
but Deadshot, you know, giving Bronze Tiger the card, and it really fit with Deadshot because he's not 100% bad guy.
Yeah.
He's a bad guy, but he's got good guy. You know, he's an anti-hero.
Yeah.
And it was great it was a great feel-good moment to know Bronze Tiger was going to get his just rewards and not, you know, go to hell for killing those innocent, you know, I guess undercover police officers that he thought were bad guys. And then with Waller, I was getting the card, but now it's not going to use. And
yeah, see, I'd like to see a follow up where she gets screwed, and it's like that.
Yeah, see her in after the credit scene of her in hell. See, that would be great.
You could see her in hell, and then you could bring Vertigo's Lucifer into it and have a crossover.
You know, it'd be great. Her in hell, and then all of the Suicide Squad members whose head she's blown up are like coming to get her in hell because they're down there too. That would have been
and
a great.
And then she tries to get John Constantine involved. It could be a really big, mega crossover.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. So yeah, A+ all around for me.
Awesome, Jordan. Where are you with this film?
I'm at an A. I'm not quite at an A+. A+ I reserve for things like Gotham by Gaslight, which are just my absolute favorite.
Things that have Catwoman in it. That's what you reserve.
Well, the Lego Batman movie had Catwoman in it, and we know how that turned out.
We know you're averse to children's fun. That's what we're
That is not the case.
You don't want the kids to have any fun, Jordan. That's your problem.
Hey, I really like Justice League Action that we were talking about earlier with Christian Slater playing Deadshot and reprising his role in this film. Justice League Action.
All right. Yeah. Okay.
This is an A for me. I really enjoyed it. The way I describe it is it's a hard R, nonstop thrill ride. It's a road trip. It's fun. For me, I know this is not a good thing for a lot of people, but for me, it gave me a similar vibe to Batman and Harley Quinn in terms of it being there's a lot of raunchy stuff. It's just a lot of bonkers, just humor. But it did have a little bit more action than that movie, and it had a little bit more emotional moments in this movie. So there was a mix, but mostly, I mean, this movie is just a blast. Yeah. It is just so much fun. You get, I think it was Terrence that was pointing out earlier how just the volume of DC characters are in it is awesome. I love the twist towards the end. That twist had my jaw dropped. This movie is, I mean, it's so much fun. I had so much fun with it.
Yeah, definitely. You can tell when they throw these level characters, these tier of DC characters in there, you know that the people involved love the material and love the characters. For me, you know what? I'm going to go because I had nothing negative to say about this movie. I'm going to go with Terrence and give it an A+. I don't know if it ranked number one on my list all time. I'd have to sit there and think about it in terms of all the Batman, all the animated films, despite universe. I'd have to sit down and make a list. Maybe we'll do a show on that one day, Jordan.
That would be fun.
It'll be headache inducing coming up with that list, but it'll be fun.
I was writing my top 10 list because I was in the comment section on Batman on Film on the latest mailbag.
Who are you fighting with now? Because you're always getting into arguments with people.
Pissed off now, Jordan? Bill was talking about his favorite animated films a little bit on his mailbag, and so I was in the comments talking about mine. So I did actually curate a top 10 list today, coincidentally.
Then I'd have to sit down and do mine. I'm gonna give it an A+. I loved it, and I could see myself popping this in, at random and rewatching it. If they did a follow up to this where they brought some of the characters back and continued, in the universe with these iterations of the characters, I definitely welcome it. A+ for me. Terrence, before we go and before we get you to plug some things, would you be interested in seeing, given you've said that you have a sort of a, I wouldn't say, I don't know if love-hate relationship with adaptations is the right word, but would you be open to seeing a adaptation of A Lonely Place of Dying and / Living as an animated feature?
That's a good question.
I have to ask because you're a big Tim Drake guy, so I thought I'd pose the question.
Yeah, that one would be a hard one to do as a film, just because, The Lonely Place of Dying is fantastic comic book story, but it jumps around a lot in time between Batman in the modern day or 1988 when that came out, or 87, and to the Dick Grayson origin story. And that, but the, I guess it's hard because the Batman at that time is in the lonely place of dying, so to speak, sure. Because of the death of Jason Todd. So you would kind of have to really go back and do the death of Jason Todd to really get why Batman is in the emotional wreckage state that he's in.
And they sort of touched on it with Red Hood, but.
Yeah, and that's kind of like they've already done that with Red Hood, so it's kind of strange. And then that kind of just ends with Tim Drake taking the mantle of Robin, but then it doesn't really lead from there. So I would probably more like to see maybe like a Batman and Robin story with Tim Drake as the Robin, or Red Robin, and then maybe throw in elements of Lonely Place of Dying as like the backstory in that, but maybe a new story, because we haven't really seen a lot of Tim Drake in the DC animated movies.
I don't think he's appeared in any of the DCU AOM line movies, but he has been in the Batman Unlimited movies as Red Robin.
Is that, or is that Damian Wayne who's Red Robin?
No, Damian Wayne appears in the third one. He's in Mechs versus Mutants and he's Robin. But no, okay. in the first two, it is Tim Robin, and there's even a throwaway line in the third one where I think he gets mentioned that he's with the Titans. So that's why he's not there.
Yeah, I haven't seen those, and I know he's in Young Justice, the animated series, which was pretty cool. He was in a little bit in Gotham by Gaslight there as one. It wasn't exactly Robin, but it was a cool cameo.
He wasn't Robin.
And listen, he has
been in the DCU AOM line technically.
And he'll be in Batman Ninja. Yeah.
Yeah, and at the rate they're going, don't be surprised if he eventually shows up on Titans one day.
That'd be cool.
In the live action streaming service show, because there's an episode title with Jason Todd, so. They're going through the they're making their way through the Robin, so you could see him pop up in live action there. It would be interesting to get more of him as in one of these as Robin, because I know they have Damian there, but it'd still be nice to see him as Red Robin or something of the like,
and
give him some play.
I'll put in a plug here a little bit too, because you asked about Lonely Place of Living. That one also would be very hard to do as a standalone movie because it ties in so much with like Mr. Oz and the Oz effect and everything that was going on with Rebirth. And then it ties into the Geoff Johns run of Teen Titans, which you'd have to do all that backstory. So I'd probably rather just see the Geoff Johns Teen Titans their future selves as a movie.
Yes.
But if you don't want to, here's my plug here. If we don't get an animated feature, the host of Robin, Everyone Loves the Drake, Rob Myers, he's the guy who started the podcast. He's the one who does all the work. I just call him up on Skype every other week and talk, and he does all the editing and does all the work and all the art. Well, some of the artwork we get, Justin Kowalski's done some of our artwork too.
Yeah, yeah.
But we have another co-host, Ryan. What Rob has done, because we were doing the Nightfall series for a long time.
Sure.
We're going through the Robin Tim Drake, chronologically as they came out. And the BBC radio in England had the Nightfall radio drama. I don't know if people have ever heard that, but it's really awesome. And so whichever comic in Nightfall or Nightquest we were talking about, Rob would play in our podcast that section of the audio drama
from the
BBC. Yeah. And it was really great. And now we're past that. So what Rob has done is he's contacted, I think, about 20 or 30 different people, different voice actors, and he wrote a script and he's had them read parts for a script he wrote based on A Lonely Place of Living. And he's going to do it. It's going to come out once a week for 4 weeks. I'm not sure when, May or June, but it'll be on our you know, Robin Everyone Loves the Drake, whichever way you get to it. And so he's going to actually have a radio drama that he wrote and created based on A Lonely Place of Living, and he's adding music and sound effects, and it's
awesome.
I've heard a little bit and it sounds really good. He's only got me in it. I'm in it a tiny little speck. I played Anarchy. He's only got like 4 or 5 lines, but you know, I was like, give me a little something to do in it. So
right,
that'll be
that's awesome.
The guy playing Batman is Justin Kowalski from Batman. Yeah.
He sounds great.
We've had him on the show. Yeah.
Okay.
I heard him in the ad.
He sounds so good. Yeah.
You guys played an ad, or I guess Rob played an ad. Rob, I guess, probably sent Andy the ad. But
yeah,
anyway,
I heard
Andy
it on
played
Holy
an
Batcast.
Ad for it on
yeah.
Holy Batcast. Yeah. And as soon as I heard Justin Kowalski's Batman voice, I was like, holy shit, that is so good.
Yeah, I want to see him in a movie.
And,
yeah.
And his Nightwing, that was kind of funny. I was like, all right. I mean,
yeah.
They sold me on this. I'm in.
Yeah, that's like a dream come true for Andy to play Nightwing.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. But so, yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Can't wait to listen to that for sure. But since Terrence went there, Jordan, where. He kind of killed two birds with one stone for us, but we'll do the official. We are part of the Batman Podcast Network, hosted by the guys over at Batman on Film. So thanks for including us in that. And if you want to check out other Batman-centric podcasts, you can do that. You can find them all there, including Robin Everyone Loves the Drake podcast, and also the Batman and Robin Eternal one, correct? I think is that,
yes, correct,
part of that as well. And then Jordan, if anybody wants to find you on social media, where can we do that? Where can we send you gifts of the Ace, the Bat-Hound belly rub?
Oh my goodness, don't even start it. You can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV. And just because we were talking about Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay, I know this episode won't be out for a couple weeks, but today for my, you know, I do my Smallville Saturdays on social media. Today, because Suicide Squad, Hell to Pay.
I have you muted aside from the podcast. No, I'm kidding.
Oh, my goodness.
Although I do mute you when you do your live stream, live tweeting of the DC shows, because your spoilers are off the wall, but
this is not referring to that. What I'm talking about is my Smallville Saturday. We are recording this on a Saturday, and because Suicide Squad Hell to Pay came out this week, for my Smallville Saturday this week, I focused on Smallville's iteration of the Suicide Squad. So I just thought I'd mention that so if you go on my social media, you can probably find that. So yeah, Twitter and on Instagram at BatFanJordanV.
All right, and Terrence, if we want to chat up with you on social media, where can we do that?
Yeah, best place, check out YouTube. I got two channels. One is called O'Neill Travel, O-N-E-I-L-L Travel, where I just post like travel videos and places we go and a lot of Disney stuff, because we go to Disney World a lot for that. And then also the Robin Everyone Loves the Drake has a YouTube page as well. So check me out there. That's the best place to get it there. Perfect. And real quick, I have a question because I'm wondering here. Jordan, on your Skype, who is that in the picture next to you? Is that Lex Luthor with hair?
It is Lex Luthor.
Okay, because he looks so different. And I'm like, who is that? And I'm like, wait, is that Lex with hair? So, yeah.
Michael Rosenbaum.
Yeah. All right, cool. Yeah, and guys, thanks for having me on. This was fun. It was a blast to talk about Suicide Squad. And I think this movie, I've watched it twice now, and it's got a really good rewatchable factor.
I hope that hope you enjoyed the experience, and then you'll come on for another episode down the line here.
Oh, definitely. Yep.
But that will wrap us up for today. We hope that the listeners all have a great weekend and or a great week, depending on when you're listening to this. Until next time, so long, everybody.
Bye-bye.